I'm Laura Vinroot Poole of Capital, and this is What We Wore. Claire Vivier of Claire V is a remarkable designer and entrepreneur who shares her journey from making bags out of her home to running stores across the country. She still runs her business out of Los Angeles, now with a team of 140 people. Last time I saw you, we had dinner. Was it the 75th anniversary of the Country Mart, I think?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Isn't it incredible that it's been there that long? Isn't it the most special place?
I love it so much. How often do you get out here?
I'm there every 6 or 8 weeks, I think. Try to. I mean, I love coming. I'd come more often if I could, but I'm still the buyer also. And so I have a lot of travel the other direction.
Yeah.
In putting this together, too, I realized I have known you a long time, I think. I mean, I think I saw you very early in your journey.
Yeah. Your store is very well known, so I've known of your store for a very long time. So,
but I never connected the Stephen Allen part. What a legend.
Yes. Yes. I've enjoyed going by his new store.
How's it going? Is he feeling good about it?
He is. It's really nice to see him shine because it's like Stephen in his natural element, having his own little store and like finding new brands. And it was really busy when I was in there. So I think he's doing well.
Are you native Californian?
No, I grew up in Minnesota.
Oh, wow. How did y'all get there?
Yeah, my parents are from Indiana. They met in junior high, I think, in Marion, Indiana. They were not a couple, but they knew each other. And when they eventually started their family, they had six kids. And I'm the youngest of six.
Oh, my gosh, Claire.
And my dad at the time was a lawyer and a he got a teaching job teaching law and Hispanic studies at the University of Minnesota.
Wow.
So he moved the family up to Minnesota when I was two. And I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, that must have been a magical place to live and grow up.
Yes, I'm very happy that we grew up in St. Paul. It was a beautiful, beautiful place to grow up.
And what was it like being the baby of six?
Well, I had a lot of freedom and
a lot of hand-me-downs.
A lot of hand-me-downs and a lot of freedom because I think they were just tired of being strict. So I got to just kind of do whatever I want. And of course, also St. Paul and the neighborhood we grew up in was just, you know, kids just were all over the place and could just run around and do whatever we wanted. But in terms of my siblings, so I have four brothers and one sister. I was just kind of always spoiled and treated well as the baby girl of the family.
What are your fondest memories of growing up there?
I loved the neighborhood we grew up in. We grew up in a neighborhood called Crocus Hill in St. Paul. And I mean, a lot of people have these memories of back in the day, you know, late 70s, early 80s, when you just had so much freedom and we were outside all the time and walk up to our local street with all the business street called Grand Avenue and, you know, just hang out and play, kick the can on the street and like run around.
I had a conversation with somebody I work with who has little people, and she said she had allowed her four-year-old to walk next door to check and see if her best friend was there. And she said maybe 15 minutes later, the doorbell rang and it was a police officer with her little girl.
Oh my gosh.
She hadn't gotten lost. She actually was just at the house ringing the doorbell and they weren't there. And the policeman brought her back. And my friend was saying, maybe I'm not a bad parent. It just didn't seem like that was a bad thing. And it's so different from how we grew up. We left at, you know, 8 in the morning, kicked the can, started, you know, like just the whole day. And then my mom had a real dinner bell that she rang and we would come home for supper. That was it.
Yeah, I remember that too. Some parents had that as well. I grew up really close to my grade school. I went to a very progressive public grade school. It was actually K through 12, but I only went there for grade school and it was called the Open School. And it was three blocks away from my house. So I got to walk there and back by myself. And I was there from kindergarten through eighth grade. And I left to go to a big, big inner city high school from that little progressive school. But I loved that school. That was great.
Was it like a Montessori?
Yeah, the open school, K through 12, and you kind of went at your own pace for whatever subject it was that you were studying. And so you could, if you were in third grade, but you were at sixth grade math levels. You could take math classes with sixth graders and or even high school classes.
Does it still exist?
I don't know. It might. I think it might have a new name. I don't think it's called Open School. It worked really well for me. I think it does not work for it didn't work for all my siblings. I was the one that stayed there the longest because you really kind of needed to have that kind of drive and self-determination to do things. Otherwise, you could like skip school and do, kind of flounder, get kind of lost in the shuffle, but it worked really well for me.
And you're such a like incredibly prolifically creative person. I wonder if that was your first sort of encouragement to do that. Do you remember a fashion memory or an art memory from that time?
Well, we definitely had wonderful art classes. So I do remember those art classes. And I do remember also learning to sew there. And I always talk about that when someone asks me how I started my business. I always say that I learned to sew in grade school. So that was very impactful in my life. And then I don't remember fashion, but I remember outfits that I wore. I remember, me being interested in fashion and getting dressed being important to me and what I was wearing.
Did you have anybody else creative in your family, any of your siblings or your parents?
One of my brothers is a musician, so he's very creative. And my sister is creative. She's very crafty. She's a very good sewer. I don't know, she's good at whatever she does, but she's a birthing professional. She's been a nurse in labor and delivery for the past 35 years, but she has started a company called Gilligan's Guide, and it's about the infant positioning in the mom's belly, and it's about getting the infant positioned for optimal birthing.
And is she still in Minnesota?
She's in Minnesota, but she's also a talented artist in her way. My parents, I would say, my mother, not she would she would never have considered herself an artist, but she was very much a free thinker and a very progressive and art appreciator, and subjected us to a lot of art growing up. And then I think my father as well, progressive and very interested in the arts. But it's funny because he was I think this picture right here behind me is my dad painting. So he did do some fun, like fine arts. He did some painting and he did some theater, but it was always kind of like something we didn't really hear about, and it was just his own thing.
What were the messages to you as a young person about what a career could look like for you? I mean, because you're the youngest, so you saw the older ones already doing things, I guess.
Yeah. They were so kind of progressive and free thinking and like kind of believed in letting their kids follow their passions and do what they wanted to do. So I remember, in college days and a little bit after that, I was a little bit like I had wished they had given me a little bit more guidance. And I remember asking my dad, "Dad, what should I do? What should I be?" And I was probably like, 18 or some, or maybe in college. And he said, "You can be whatever you want to be, babe." I always remember that because I think he truly believed it, and I think that was his biggest privilege, was that he was able to tell his daughter and his kids that, because that definitely was not the case for him. He grew up extremely poor Mexican, in a small town in Indiana where there were not a lot of Mexicans, not a lot of brown people. So I think the fact that he had gotten us to this point in life where he could say, "You can be whatever you want to be," was a big privilege to him.
Amazing. How did you decide to go to San Francisco for college?
I think being the last of six, I just kind of wanted to get away. My dad had taken me to New York a few times on some of his business trips, and that those were I think I went two times during high school, and those were the only times I got to see, like, I had never been to California, and New York was it for me, and I saw the big city, and I was like, "Oh, this is
This is
happening.
it.
Yeah, this is happening." I was already very into fashion, so I knew that New York was something that I wanted, but I also knew of California being another bastion of wonderful creative things happening. New York sounded a little intimidating to me, so I didn't apply to any schools in New York. Los Angeles, same, too intimidating. And so San Francisco just sounded like a big city, an exciting place to be without it being like this huge, huge metropolitan area. So that's how I chose San Francisco. I applied to some schools in Connecticut and also down the Claremont schools I
Oh,
applied to.
nice.
And I'm so happy that I chose San Francisco because best city of San Francisco was such a great place for me to be and great education for me. I went to the University of San Francisco and that was fine. And that was, you know, I had some great professors and things, but I think mostly I'm just so happy I was in San Francisco.
What did you major in?
English. I thought I was going to be a writer. I wanted to be a writer, but I wanted to write about fashion, you know? So I think what I really wanted was to be in the fashion world. So
Did you work while you were there? Did you do other things?
I always waited tables. I always worked in cafes and worked at restaurants in San Francisco, which was also a really, really great education in, you know,
The best food in the world.
best food in the world, wine, such an education of wine and food, and really great place to be. I worked at a place called Universal Cafe, and that was a really great restaurant back then. And I learned so much about France and Italy and, you know, Alice Waters and great food, you know,
Yeah.
what California cuisine was. So that I worked during college, and then after college, the only kind of writing positions when I actually utilized that degree were after college, I worked for the website of the NBC affiliate in San Francisco, which was used to be KRON. I don't think they're NBC anymore, but I worked for their first website. It was when websites were just starting, and I worked for kind of a fun, like trendy show that talked about different trends in San Francisco.
You didn't feel like that was it.
No, I didn't. And then it was kind of an interesting time because already back then, which was so long ago, kind of editorial jobs were kind of going away and things were kind of in flux already because as the internet was happening and
Yeah.
so magazines weren't really the path to a lot of success anymore. So I didn't think moving to New York and trying to get a job at Condé Nast was really a great path for me. And so I got a wild hair to move to Paris. I just picked up and moved to Paris. I got an internship at a documentary film production company, and I took a job waiting tables, being paid under the table. I don't know. I think I just wanted to be, again, wanted to be close to the world of fashion. And I think I was just kind of that early 20s fearlessness of I can do whatever. And it's kind of a great time to do things like that because I feel like as you age, you become more fearful. And I didn't have any fear. I was moving to a country that I didn't speak the language, but I thought, well, I can probably do this.
And I'm thinking with a last name like Vivier, maybe you met your husband there.
I did meet my husband there, yes. Yes, my last name was Guerrero, yeah, my maiden name. We met at a dinner party. I'd been in France for probably 2 or 3 months by the time I met him.
And how long did y'all stay?
Well, I stayed for 10 months in Paris, and then my boyfriend, who became my husband, came back with me, and we've been together ever since.
Wow. And where did y'all move from there?
We moved to the Bay Area.
And what were you doing at the time? And what was he doing that he could move there?
He was working in the world of French television. He was a journalist for French television, and he was able to move and just do stories for France about the United States. So he was working a lot, traveling a lot around the US and shooting stories for France. And there was a time that we were working together. I was working with him producing stories for French television. Yeah, I did that for a while, and then we moved down to Los Angeles, and I started to work in production, prop styling, things like that. I just, you know, called friends and said, "What are you guys doing?" And they gave me some work in the prop styling world and the production world, and you know, wanted to explore the entertainment industry since this is really the place to be for it. And I really didn't glom onto it. I really was like, I don't know if this is my passion. But I had started to sew bags myself. Something sparked, and I really felt like this is it. This is my passion. And if I could figure out how to make this work, I would be so happy.
And what were the bags? What did they look like, and where did you sell them?
I started to make laptop envelopes for myself and my friends.
You had your sewing machine with you in LA. Had you traveled around with it from San Francisco to Paris back to LA?
I did have one with me. It was not a great sewing machine, but I had a sewing machine. And yeah, I guess I had traveled with some janky sewing machine. I don't even remember. What I do remember is that one day we were living in Oakland and I found $400 on the street and I knew that I was going to use that $400 to buy a nice sewing machine. And I went that day and bought a good sewing machine.
Wow.
And that was really with this dream of, you know, making more bags and starting this bag company.
And did you tell your husband along the way? I mean, did you say, I'm really not liking this, you know, working in production. I think this is what I want to do.
I don't know. I think it was more of a hobby and a, I don't remember when I expressed to him that this was really something I wanted to turn into a real business and for it to be really my life's work.
Had you told anybody? Had you told your parents or friends anything?
Well, I think it just, everything went like day by day, step by step. You know, I started with a website and I had a friend build me a website and I would take all the pictures and I would upload the pictures and write the copy and do everything. So I just, you know, my friend made the framework for the website. And then once I had the e-com set up, I contacted editor friends in New York and would get some press and, you know, would get things like Daily Candy and things like that. They were so important. I'm not sure when my husband took it seriously. You know, I kind of can benchmark things by dates. Like in 2010, I hired my first employee. In 2011, I moved the business out of the house. In 2012, I opened my first store.
That's fast.
And then, you know, kind of opened a store a year ever since.
I talk to entrepreneurs a lot, and I always say, be careful about sharing what you want to do, especially with the people that you don't expect. I mean, especially with the people that love you the most. Mm-hmm. You don't always get the most encouraging answer from them or feedback, right?
Oh, for sure. I completely believe that. And I think that's probably why I wasn't extremely vocal about this is what I'm going to do. You know, I remember one day walking in New York with a friend and my friend asking me about my business and we were walking by a Kate Spade store. And I remember she said something like, well, what do you want from this? What do you want? What do you think? And I said, I actually want to be this one day. That seemed so outrageous to me. And I felt like, oh my gosh, I
can't believe I said that.
I shouldn't say things like that. And I, you know, knock on wood, even to this day that I say things like that. So I felt like very like kind of ashamed or embarrassed, but you know, she was one of my best friends and I felt like I could be honest with her.
And what was her response?
I don't remember. I'm sure she was just like, okay, wow.
Cool.
Okay, great. You know, yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. But it's funny that I still remember that because it really was a moment where it was the first time I had voiced that I really wanted to take this far. I didn't want it to be like a small thing. I wanted to keep going and keep going and build the brand.
And could you visualize sort of what that looked like? I mean, what it would take to be able to produce it, expand your production, expand your team, and also expand your marketing?
Oh my gosh. No, I really think ignorance is bliss. It was such a gift that I didn't know how hard it was all going to be. When I am talking to entrepreneurs now, I don't say this at all, but I always think, of course, we're now on a podcast and someone might listen to this, but I think when someone says they're starting a fashion brand, they're starting a bag line or a clothing line, I'm always like, wow, okay. I'm never negative with anyone who says that, but in my mind, I'm thinking, well, it's going to take a shit ton of determination and perseverance because it's really hard. I'm happy that I didn't know. And I think I was smart enough to know that what I didn't know and what I was good at and what I was not good at. How do I find the help to be for, you know, the bookkeeping part? I knew immediately, like, I have a problem with bookkeeping. I'm scared of money. I'm scared of where I was at the time. You know, I was scared that I wasn't going to have enough money to pay the bills and I wasn't going to have enough money. So I knew that I needed a bookkeeper. And She was a great hire. She was a part-time employee, and I think she was kind of like my first or second employee, but she was only part-time, so I don't ever really count her. But she was extremely important to those first few years of the business.
A lot of times people have worked in an industry that they become an entrepreneur in, and you didn't have any experience in it other than writing
No.
about it.
No. And no family,
Yeah.
no business people in my family at all, so.
Did your parents think, and your husband, were they like, has she lost her mind, or were they?
They were always just amazed. I think, well, so both of my parents have now passed away. My father passed away about 10 years ago. He passed away right after the opening of my second store, which was in New York, in Nolita. And he got to come see the opening of that store. And
Wow.
I think even then, he was very amazed by the success that I was having. Just really proud and happy for me. Didn't understand how I was doing it or what was happening, but proud. And then my mom passed away 2 years ago, so she really got to see it go pretty much. She was just always so amazed. She was just always like, "I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do this, Angie." She calls me Angie. If she called me Angie, she was like, "I don't know how you do it, Angie. It just amazes me."
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, my husband, I don't know that he was, since he's been with me along for the journey, I don't know that he has that same type of amazement. I think his feeling about this is that I'm just one thing in particular I find interesting is his perspective is that he is witness to somebody who really loves what they do. And we have a conversation every once in a while about the fact that not everyone loves what they do, their
Most
job,
people don't. Yeah.
right? And that is something that's a foreign concept to me because I do love what I do so much, and I am so fortunate to come to work and be excited to be here and work with people I love and do something creative and see this type of growth, and then have the satisfaction of seeing people wearing the product and all that stuff is something that I'm so grateful for and just makes me still re really happy.
I read somewhere that you talked about the magical feeling of staying up late and sewing your own bags. Will you talk about that?
Yeah, that's when I was just starting out and I had post finding the $400, and it was my first experience with designing bags, and I knew how to sew, but I had never sewn my own things and figured out my own patterns. And that was something that it utilizes your right and your left brain because you have to do things reverse and backwards basically when you're sewing, and you have to really, it's like a math problems, and you have to really think about it. And I loved both aspects. I loved the idea of creating something beautiful and what were the dimensions that were the most conducive to a good laptop case design. What were the elements that were going to make it special? What was going the trim going to be? But it needed something, what were the little touches that made it specific to me and my own brand, which wasn't really a brand yet.
And wait, what was it, a brand then? Was it called Claire V then?
No, when I first started, I called it C. Vivier,
Oh.
and then I called it Claire Vivier. So I started the company as Claire Vivier, like for when I, was kind of a real company, it was Claire Vivier. And then in 2013, I was forced to change my name to Claire V for legal reasons. But that's fine. We're all moved on, and I think it suits the company well.
It does, but are we moved on? Like, was that, how hard was that? I bet that was really difficult because it is your name.
Oh, we're for sure moved on. Okay.
Can we legally talk about
I think we can talk about it. The company Roger Vivier sued me, and for a trademark infringement, I think is what they call those types of things. And I really thought, well, this is crazy. That's my name, and
Yeah.
just because we were in the same category of Roger Vivier, which is they do some handbags, although they're primarily shoes. And I was such a small company at the time, and I did not think I had the resources to fight them legally and didn't want to expend the time and energy to fight a company like that. It's a huge Italian conglomerate. So I really, settled very quickly. And I mean, I sometimes miss Vivier. I think it's such a pretty name, but it's still my name.
Yeah.
We really just moved on very quickly. It was like, okay, Claire V, moving on. And like, we never looked back and never thought of it again. So,
When did you realize it was time to move the business out of your house?
well, it was really taking, so bags were really taking over. I had found one. I was producing bags in Los Angeles with one factory, and I would, buy the materials and go drop them off at the factory. I would kind of make trips every day to the factory, just going to check up on the production and going to pick up what was ready and bring it back to my house. And I had moved from one room to another room. I was upstairs in my house and moved downstairs in my house, took over the den that we had, and then the den became too small, so I was putting a lot of bags in our dining room.
Did you have your son at this point too, or no?
Yeah. And had a small child, yeah. And so he was part and parcel of those early years. I'm just looking at some drawings he did because he used to just be in my room with me drawing while I was making things or, emailing or whatever I was doing, shipping. So once I started, the boxes started to be a problem because I was shipping to stores. In 2011, I had a neighbor named Catherine Bentley, who is a great jewelry designer here in Los Angeles, and she was also looking for an office space. So we were like, let's just look for a space together. And we found a space in Silver Lake, which happened to be a retail store. But we thought, that's fine. We'll just use the back. And hey, since there is a retail store, why don't we just use the first front, like the first little slice, first third of it, to be a little retail store? I'll sell bags. You can sell jewelry. And we used the back part as our offices. And it was very quickly clear that this was very successful for both of us.
And did you have an employee running it? I mean, you had somebody selling it, or were y'all doing
No, we
that?
were just in the back, and we both had employees, and my employees started to grow. I mean, my bags, you just take more employees than jewelry. It's just jewelry is a much smaller operation. Yeah, we would just have one of the employees go out front every time someone came in, and then 2012, a space became available at the corner, which is still where we have our store in Silver Lake. And that is where I say is the very first Claire V store, because that's where we were still Claire Vivier. That's my very first store.
In those first 5 years, what do you think the biggest risk you took during that time? Was it opening the store?
Yes, taking on rents was the first risk. So first with Vivier and Bentley, with Catherine Bentley, and then moving down to the corner. It's just the stakes are higher and the square footage is a lot right now, but it's still that same feeling of, oh my gosh, are we really going to be doing this? Are we really going to be paying this much in rent every month?
I understand.
You understand.
And why was it so important to you to grow your team in the stores in Los Angeles?
Well, it just made the most sense and was easiest. And this is our hometown and this is our community, and it's a great place to be as well because there are, a lot of fashionable people and people interested in brands and buying something special. So it happened to be. I also think I'm always very thankful that I started the company here in Los Angeles and not in New York or Paris, because I think those places are more intimidating to me in terms of the world of fashion versus Los Angeles. People in LA, we have our own space and we're doing our own thing, and we're not feeling the same kind of comparison with other people all the time. And when I'm in New York, I'm always like, oh my gosh, we're not doing enough. We're not doing this. You see all these other brands doing all these other things versus in Los Angeles, my offices have always been in Silver Lake. Right now we're in Frogtown, which is Silver Lake adjacent, but nowhere near the fashion world,
It's interesting you say that. I was telling the buying team they were having a problem with a couple of sales reps, and they were saying, I don't believe what she says to me. The way she talks to me, like we're not on the same plane of what we're talking about. And I said, you have to understand, these are gals that are just out of college. They're living in New York. They're, 25 years old. They have an enormous amount of rent, and they really do have to sell you a lot of product. And so you do need to consider that. Whereas I think in LA, there's so much more space physically and also just space to be creative and to think. And you're not like, you don't have this like, $5,000 rent for your 400 square foot studio pressing down on you to influence what you're saying. And they're like, oh, yeah, that does kind of make sense, actually.
Yeah, I suppose you feel the same being in a Charlotte.
Yeah.
You get to have this beautiful store and it's not this crushing rent, I assume, or maybe not when you started it.
Yeah, when I started it was. But I also think, like you said, I mean, I think any rent is crushing and any employee is crushing in that it's a massive responsibility, you know, to meet that every month
Yeah.
and to not to let them down.
I have about 100 and I think 140 people now on the payroll.
Wow.
That's just kind of a number that is kind of, I'm flabbergasted, but at the same time, I think I'm a very, one of my business talents is that I'm able to compartmentalize. And I think it works to my advantage a lot because I think that's how I sleep at night. That's the other thing my husband says to me is like, I don't know how you sleep at night. I don't know how you, because I'm a much better sleeper than he is. And he's like, if I had the weight of all the responsibilities, he would never sleep. And it's true. You just
Right,
wouldn't be
right.
such a big worrier. And I think my gift is that I'm able to just be like, okay, I can't do anything about that right now. I'm
Can't
gonna
fix
just,
that right now. Yeah.
I can't.
That might be women, and that might maybe even be mothers. I mean, I think you sort of you're forced to in so many different ways compartmentalize, don't you think?
Yeah.
And one of the things about you that I think is really interesting, and we don't hear this a ton, you've had a business partner for a lot of your time in business, yes?
Yes.
And it's been a very positive relationship. I don't hear that all the time.
Especially in fashion, right?
Right, exactly.
I do feel like I hear way more often than not that there's been some kind of fraught relationship and it hasn't really worked out the best for the designer. And you know, knock on wood, still time to go, but we've been partners for 12 years. So that was right before I opened my first store. It was very early on in my trajectory and the business's trajectory. I met a man named Tom Cartsotis through Stephen Allen. Stephen was my mentor and good friend already. He carried my bags. My bags were sold at his showroom as well. And he was just always a very early champion of the brand. And in 2012, he said, I'd like to introduce you to a guy named Tom Cartsotis, and he's interested in investing in some fashion companies right now. So I met with Tom, and it was very informal. We met at the Greenwich Hotel over tea, and I didn't have a business plan. I didn't have anything to show him. We just talked about what my dreams were for the company and what my problems were at the time and how did I see that I could, you know, fix these problems and what could he do for me? And we just kind of like chatted. And then afterwards I thought, well, okay, what's next? Do you want a business plan? Do you want anything? And he said, well, why don't you just send me an email and put some of this stuff in writing for me, but I don't need a business plan. So I wrote out a long email to him, and that's how our business was forged. And at the time, he decided to purchase 40% of the company. The money just went back into the company. I didn't take any money off the table at the time. And then Stephen Allen bought 7% from Tom. So I had two partners. They're still my partners. So Tom owned 33%, Stephen owned 7%, and I owned 60%.
And what sort of support did they give you? I mean, you said you're always good at knowing what you're not good at. Well, what were the things that they helped you with that you knew they were the right fit?
Well, at the time, I think I had about 10 employees, and I needed more employees. And I also knew that in order to attract people to work for the company, I needed to provide health care. So that was number one on my list. I remember saying to Tom, I don't know anything about how to, and I don't want to spend the time figuring it out, like how to get health care for my employees. Can you help me with that? And he said, sure, I'll help you with that. So I was able to go under their umbrella of his other companies and bring my employees in. And so for a time being, we had health care that way. They were very helpful on leases. They looked at the leases. One of the main things for the first probably 8 years of our partnership, his fractional CFO was my fractional CFO.
Really helpful.
Randy Kercho was extremely helpful in keeping things very clean on our books. And I was very, very thankful for that because that was just an area. And we had my bookkeeper, that same bookkeeper that I brought, she was with me for many years working with Randy. And We just got to a point where she didn't want to do it anymore. We were just a bigger company than she wanted to deal with. As time went on, that's so helpful with figuring out who I needed to hire because I had never worked in a bigger fashion company. So I didn't even know the roles that we needed. Like I was doing some of the functions, but didn't know what they were called, like a merchandiser or a planner or a product development person or, the production team,
Yeah, I do know. And it sounds like you've always been comfortable calling yourself a creative. At what point did you start feeling comfortable calling yourself a business person?
I don't know when I started to feel comfortable with that. I think maybe it was recently. I have been playing a business person for to the exterior world. I've been a business person because I've been the owner of this company with all these stores, but I didn't feel comfortable thinking of myself as a business person until recently when I just started to. I don't know, it just comes with age and with time when you're just like, I'm doing this. This is me making all these decisions. And yes, I have a great president, and yes, I have good partners, but I'm the person choosing those people, and I'm the person making the final decisions on these things. And I have built this team. I've brought the creative people in as well as the other, so I guess just recently.
And how has the business changed as you've opened in more communities? Has that made it transform?
I don't know that it has transformed the company, but it has. We've just grown, one thing that I notice is that we have to have more teams doing more specific things. So whereas our creative team used to kind of touch everything, now they kind of are like, you're on stores now. You're very creative, but now you're on stores. You're no longer going to be on product, and this other person who's creative is just going to be on product and things like we don't have time to have everyone on everything now. So we have to be very conscientious about setting the roles for people.
Do you have a dream store, a dream location for a store?
I sure do. I would love to open in
Yeah.
Paris.
What neighborhood?
We go back and forth. I think probably the Marais just because of the amount of foot traffic. I love the Left Bank and being in Saint-Germain or the Sixth or something like that. But I think the shop, it's so beautiful and calm and like civilized down there. It feels
It
great.
does.
But that's where I'd like to live. And I'd probably like to have a store, just keep it in the Marais or.
I'm with you. But about Los Angeles, tell me, why is it so important to you to produce in Los Angeles?
Oh, this is something that I really love. I love that. It started with one factory, went to two, three, four, five factories we now utilize in Los Angeles. And I just love that we're able to, number one, be so close to the production. So we get to go down and see QC product very easily. But also, it's always so inspiring whenever you go to the factory. You're talking to really skilled professionals and you get to really chat about designs and things inevitably come up that you hadn't thought about that could be problems or new designs. This happens all the time that I'm just chatting with the head of the factory and we'll figure out new designs, which is extremely inspiring to me. But the main thing is the jobs that we're creating in this community. I mean, it's great to create jobs anywhere in the world, but it's really, really nice to know that we're creating jobs with living wages to people here, right here in Southern California.
What are you most proud of in the past 16 years of your business?
I think I'm proud also of the people that I see wearing the bags and the amount of joy that it brings them and the fact that they're very like excited to meet me because they love their product so much and they love the brand. And that's really cool. And I'm really proud of that.
Tell me what's powerful about starting so small.
Well, I think it's the only thing I know, so I can't compare it to anything, but I will say that when you start small, you do understand every aspect of the company. And so you can have a lot of respect and a lot of empathy for people and all the roles in the company. I think starting small for me was so wonderful because of the product, because I'm, again, the person, the product person, the creative person, and I love being able to choose choose all the elements, choose all the pieces of hardware, choose the leathers, the materials, the linings, everything, and then go down to a factory and get to discuss that with the people making the bags. I don't think you would be able to do that if you started with a lot of capital, because you would have to already have a team, and there would be a lot expected of you immediately. And I'm just very thankful there was nothing expected of me.
Do you think if you pulled out your laptop covers, could you put them in the store now? Would they sit alongside your collection now?
No, for sure, no. Especially because I made them in Canvas. I can draw from them now as inspiration, and we've definitely done. But we make them a lot nicer now. A lot cuter. There was a time when I started to work with leather, when just the beginning of working with leather. My machine did not work on leather. I didn't have the right foot to sew with the machine, so I was sewing things by hand in leather, and I was using an awl. It looks like a big needle with a wooden handle, and you kind of poke it into the leather, and it's hand sewing
Got it.
device. And I would sew with embroidery thread and awl, and make these big chunky stitches with shiny gold embroidery thread on patent leather. And those, I think, could almost sit in our store these days. But I think we could make them better.
I know you weren't at open school anymore, but if you did make your own dress, want to know what you wore to prom?
I think you would have liked my prom dress. I wore one of my mother's dresses from the 50s.
Oh.
It was a beautiful strapless cabbage roses, silk chiffon fitted with a 50s like tea length.
What color?
It was like kind of a cream with the pink and green roses.
Oh.
I didn't like the length, so I tucked it under to make it a bubble skirt.
Oh my gosh. It sounds so good. Okay.
To make it a mini, and it was so cute.
Oh
And
my
that was,
gosh. And so just altered that part, everything else fit perfectly. You didn't have to do anything.
everything else fit
Wow.
perfectly, crazily
Wow.
enough.
And then do you remember accessories, shoes, or hair?
I got the pumps, the green pumps that I had dyed
To match the
green
flower.
to match the green on the flower, which were actually pretty cute. I wish I still had them, but I don't. They were satin pumps,
Wow.
That was a pretty cute outfit. I have a picture of it.
Oh,
I
I need
can
to see that. Yeah,
text it.
that sounds like a good look. Wow. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today. I have really, really enjoyed talking with you and hearing about your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I love your store so much. It makes me want to go over to the Country Mart now and go shopping.
Me too.
Yes, I haven't been there in a while, so I gotta go do some
Thank
shopping.
you, Claire. What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.